call a meeting of the Public Safety Committee to order. Was the dais President Bullock, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Powers, Councilman Hollins, Councilman Cartier, Councilwoman Diller, and Karen Barlow is taking the minutes. I'm here chairing the meeting today because Co-Chairman Bell is out of town. What's your pleasure on the minutes?
Motion approved.
Second.
All's in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. The first item on the agenda is Resolution 15-106, adopting the Newcastle County multi-jurisdictional all hazard mitigation plan. Dave, you want to?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Dave Carpenter, Jr., Coordinator of Emergency Management for Newcastle County. As we do, as we did back in 2010 and 2005 when the original plan was written, this is the resolution to adopt the Newcastle County multi-jurisdictional all hazard mitigation plan. As most of you know, I think I came to you a couple of meetings back in October, November timeframe to let you know that we were starting the planning process for this plan, updating the mitigation actions, updating the hazard identification and vulnerability. This is a FEMA required plan for us to have. If we don't have this plan, it dissolves our ability to go after presidential disaster declaration funding. It also dissolves our ability to go after any hazard mitigation funding or pre-disaster mitigation funding through FEMA. It also could put us in jeopardy with the National Flood Insurance Program. So this is definitely a key plan. The plan we just got word about a week and a half ago that it was approved by FEMA, pending the adoption by the governing body of the government. If you have any questions, I know there's two attachments that went along with the resolution. One is the executive summary of the plan, which really sums up what the goals and objectives are of the plan and the overall strategy. And then the extra packet is the mitigation actions. I didn't want to break the continuity of that, so I know that's a lot to go through. As I told Legislative Aide Barlow, that really, to be particular, what we're adopting under there is the specific actions for the unincorporated area of Newcastle County. And as you can see, Councilman Smiley, there's a couple of kind of outlined those items that we talked about before about identifying the next phase of buyouts or elevations that we're going to tackle for mitigation grants in the future, especially in the Dural Heights area and Christiana area that we talked about in the past. If there's any other questions?
Can you just give us an overview of the jurisdictions involved?
Yes. All 13 jurisdictions within Newcastle County are involved. I know in the executive summary, I think we missed the city of Wilmington listing them in there. We've corrected that in the final copy, and I'll make sure you guys get that. But all 13 municipalities participated in the process during the planning phase in one way or another, either through email and conversations with them, or they actually attended and had a representative at one of two steering committee meetings and a municipal workshop. And then we also had the public meeting. In addition to the 12 municipalities that we had in the plan before, this plan, the difference in this plan from the previous plan is that the city of Wilmington had their own separate plan. They are now encompassed under our plan. And in the past, the University of Delaware had their own plan and they're now encompassed under our plan also. So we did this process all together. A lot of cost savings to the county and the city because since the contractor did our plans together, the city didn't have to pay a chunk of money for the contractor to do a separate plan. Same thing with the university. So we maximized everybody's effort in the process. And it was all paid for by a FEMA grant.
Thank you. Any other questions from council? Questions from the public?
Somebody got a pinball machine.
I'd like to recognize the presence of Councilman Redder, who has joined us. Next item on the agenda is Ordinance 15056. It's under sponsorship of Councilman Ballinai, and this will be voted on tonight, as will the previous resolution. It's to amend the grants budget, appropriate $90,000 from SLEAF to Special Law Enforcement Assistance Fund, which is really for wearable cameras grant and for taser weapons grant, and $26,000. Any comments from anybody from the department? Chief?
Cameras are not a state mandate at this point, but if my guesses are right, they will become one. And if that happens, they'll be unfunded. And if you get stuck with an unfunded mandate, the cameras are cheap. They just put on their uniform, that's no problem. The cost of the back room, the cost of the servers, the cost of providing that video, how long you keep it, who it's provided to, how much video data you keep, do you use a cloud storage, do you buy servers? That's millions and millions of dollars. We have to start somewhere. This agency is the first agency in Delaware to openly go after cameras. We didn't get them first. Well, we wanted them first. Captain Crowell, my grants and technology commander, has been going after the money for some time, and this is the first toe in the pool is this funding.
Thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Questions, comments from council members? Questions or comments from the public? This will be voted on tonight. Next item on the agenda is Ordinance 15-059, under sponsorship of Councilman Bell and myself, amend the grant budget, appropriate $265,000 in federal funding for the Department of Homeland Security, $440,000 in local funding from Newcastle County, $41,000 in private funding from the Public Service Enterprise Group to operate the Office of Emergency Management for fiscal year 2016. Dave?
Yes, Chairman, thank you very much. Also accompanying this, sir, if I may, ask of you to the ordinance 060 and 062 are also the accompanying ordinances that go along with 060, or 059, I'm sorry.
What are the numbers, I'm sorry?
060, the next one down.
Right.
And 062 on the next page, number 8.
Okay.
So this is our annual appropriations ordinances that we put in order to appropriate the funds through the grant budget and decrease the operating money that's been appropriated by you under the county operating budget, to decrease that from the county operating budget. So that's the first ordinance, 059, is appropriate the federal funding allotment for the operational year from FEMA, the additional funding into the grants budget for the county match portion of it, which is a 440 amount, and then the private funding that we receive from the nuclear plant to fund the radiological preparedness program in our office. And then 060 is to reduce the money from the operating budget on the county side, and 062 is to amend the current FY15 grant to add in the additional federal funding that we receive as an award from DEMA and FEMA for project basis for the next year. If there's any questions on those are obviously simply what you approved and what we discussed during the budget presentations and the budget hearing under our allocation of funding.
Any questions from council members on Ordinance 15059, 15060, or 15062? Any questions from members of the public? Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you, Council Bishop.
I'd like to recognize the presence of Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Tack, and Councilman White. Next item on the agenda is Ordinance 15061, introduced by myself and Councilman Bell, amend the grants budget appropriate $502,000 to the contracted police due to revolving fund for Department of Public Safety. We do this every year. Any questions, comments from members of council?
I do.
Councilman Shelton.
Wanted to make sure I answered, and I guess this would be Chief or CAO. When this is the revolving fund of somebody contracting us, St. John's Beloved and so forth, they pay the full amount of what the officer's contract is, as far as not only their wages but their benefits, and also, is that correct?
That's correct.
So it does not cost the county any money. All right, thank you. I've had this argument with this particular person, and it's on the tape now. So,
in fact, that's why it's so expensive.
Right. I said that.
Let me be clear. Last time I inquired, it was $100 an hour.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Okay, well,
I think I said lower, but I did say it does not cost us any money. People pay for the service is what I was getting
at a rate of $100 an hour.
Oh, I'm sure it is, yeah.
Pay for maintenance too on the vehicles.
Councilman Coyne.
I wonder, just for the record, to get that amount stated, exactly what it is to contract for off-duty cops.
Chief?
It's $64 an hour is what the exact amount would be. There are cases where it's more based on if you're requesting mounted or you're requesting a canine, but the general rate going, unless someone stays different, is $64 an hour.
Councilman Tech.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's a minimum of 2 hours, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
The dog gets overtime.
Any other questions, comments from council members? Questions or comments from the general public? Moving on to ordinance 15-064, under sponsorship of myself and Councilman Bell, amend the capital budget, appropriate $52,653 from the Clerk of the Peace Technology Fee Account for the CloudView Project Unmanned Aerial Vehicle. This money has been made available from the Office of the Clerk of the Peace. I had, Councilman Bell and I did have some discussion with the clerk about it before he brought it over. The chief and I have had some discussion about it. Chief, do you want to comment on it?
I may have to defer to Captain Corral if there's going to be questions about policy, because we are still early in the infancy stages, and obviously you don't put a unmanned aerial craft out there without a policy. That being said, there's not many laws in regards to these. Other agencies have them. We do not have an aviation's unit. As you know, the Delaware State Police spent $200 million on helicopters last year alone. We don't have that kind of money. I'm sure I don't have to tell this group that. But there are benefits to having that type of equipment. And some people think that they're going to be all tactical, and that's just not true. There are other benefits to having it as regards to what type of response we have, missing persons and things of that nature, a public event. So they're expensive, but they're not expensive when you compare to actually having a helicopter.
John McCordy.
This particular ordinance is appropriating money for the technology of software. Looks CloudView project. Is it, or is it actual, you know, an actual drone?
Well, they don't call them drones, but yeah.
Captain Crow, County Police. This is a project that Major Feaser and Sergeant Snyder from our agency have been heading up, and unfortunately, in a family emergency, Major Feaser wasn't able to attend today. But she and Sergeant Snyder traveled and looked at a drone. We kind of know what we want. There's an RFP that should be going out here in the very near future. It is an unmanned aerial vehicle. It'll be flown in line of sight, is our current philosophy. Public areas, not to go over housing developments or anything like that, unless we're actively searching for a missing person, an Alzheimer's patient, a dangerous fugitive, something along those lines. And it is very new, and I think our agency is doing it right, because we've been in touch with the FAA, we've been in touch, we have to go through a licensing process. You know, me as a private citizen, I can go to the hobby store today and buy one of these and fly it all around my neighborhood if I want. There's really not a whole lot the FAA is going to do to me. They're not going to come probably that crowd, but they will target a government entity if we don't use it correctly and appropriately. So even once we get this, there's at least a 6-month training where we have to get so many flying hours in. It's almost like an airplane or a helicopter training program. It's very in-depth to make sure that, A, our equipment's working correctly, but more importantly, the operators know how to work it correctly as well. It would have a camera on it, which will be able to live stream to our tactical operations center on scene, as well as back to the fusion center at headquarters. One of the other packages we're looking at is to have a changeable payload option, where if it's nighttime, you'd be able to put on an infrared camera to be able to search for subjects that way as well. You look at it as, and it's something that all public safety could benefit from. From police, of course, there's obvious advantages, but if it was, say, a SWAT situation, now we'll be able to get an aerial view and be able to develop a more sound tactical plan. But in talking to Chief Carpenter, he can use it for disaster response, with pre- and post-planning, you know, same with medics. If there's a large scene, you can get this up, they can see what they're dealing with. So I think all around it's an emergency technology. There's a lot of apprehension about it, which we're apprehensive too, and we're still working out the policy, we're looking at best practices throughout the country, we're pulling a lot on IACP and some other agencies, but everyone's been very supportive so far.
Thank you, Ken. Councilman Powell.
Yeah.
I guess probably the training too is the distance, because you'll be able to go further than the ones the public has a distance requirement that cut, it gets to a certain point, you go any further, it goes back.
We could with, based on the equipment, but however, we're, FAA rules pretty much mandate we stay under 400 feet, and I'm sure the Delaware State Police Aviation Unit would appreciate that as well, since they fly at 500 feet sometimes.
I guess it's the distance.
Yeah.
It's what I'm saying. Yeah. So far, not going the height, I understand. Yeah. I mean, they're using, if you don't have them, there's a lot of ag companies that have them. They're using them for scouting fields.
Yes. And you are correct.
In the ag business, there's a lot. They've really improved probably in the last 6 months. What they can do with them.
And that's one of the things that we are very concerned about is safety, so it would be line of sight. However, if it loses contact with the controller, it's automatically reprogrammed to return to where it took off from.
Yeah. One thing about it is there has been individuals that have gone and looked into swine houses, looked right in the windows. The farmer went out and shot it. Because under FAA rules, you're not allowed to shoot a plane out of the air, and he got in trouble for it. So there's a lot of laws that are going to start coming down because you're spying on somebody.
And we definitely are going to.
I mean, I'm not saying for you guys,
protect that.
But I'm saying anybody can do it, and you know, if it's flying around my house looking in there, don't shoot it. I know, but you'll be tempted to. It's not you standing right here.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you're right, Councilman, because I think the policies will limit our abilities versus the public's a lot more severely.
Some things are just worth it, Councilman.
You get shot out of the air.
Yes, some things are just worth it.
We're lawmakers, not lawbreakers.
Yeah, well, they can't be seeing them if they're
the only
around
way you can make a new one is to show the old one ain't working.
They went too far. First thing, they'd be over 400 feet.
Any other questions, comments from council members? Questions or comments from the public? Moving on, the next item on the agenda is an overview of the Fusion Center at the Public Safety Building.
Good afternoon, Council. Jeff Miller, Chief of Communications. The director wanted me to take some time, just a few minutes, to update you on where we are with our Fusion Center. First, let me start by saying on April the 14th, we dedicated it and named it the J. William Bell Fusion Center. And the reason we had selected the word fusion was the way we're processing our calls today and the way we're gathering our information and the amount of information that we are gathering relevant to the events that we process on behalf of the 30-some public safety agencies that we provide service for, as well as the public. We're trying to put all that information into one event now, and whether it's a police officer, a paramedic, a volunteer firefighter and BLS unit, if it's every police agency that operates within Newcastle County, we should all be on the same event and we should all be seeing what each other are doing. And the whole goal is there is marrying all that information together. And as we continue to grow the Fusion Center, it's not manned or staffed on a regular basis as of yet, but as we look at different technologies and as we begin to change the way we process our 911 calls in the center, I do envision a time when we will staff the room with one or two people that basically watch what the 911 center is doing. 3,000 opportunities a day come in and out of that room to process with, contact with the public, and I think we will only do ourselves great justice to watch those 3,000 events kind of from the balcony level, look down and just make sure everything's being processed and we're not missing that one piece of the puzzle, which will be the one that makes us newsworthy, because no one's ever walking through our doors to pat us on the back saying what a great job we're doing, but they're all standing around waiting until the day we mess up. We're still writing policy for what the Fusion Center, as we begin to grow it. We will continue to change policy and procedures. We're working with the Office of Emergency Management, because let's face it, that room was the Emergency Operations Center all the time. It will still be the Emergency Operations Center. when an event takes place in Newcastle County, or if we need to support any of the agencies we provide service for, then that room will grow from gathering the information, not only pre-event, but during the beginning, the inception of the event, to growing the room into being the EOC, where all the incident commanders come forward to that location and make much better, much more informed decisions based on the information that we'll be able to provide them. June 23rd at the Finance Committee meeting, we'll be presenting a product to capital funding that hopefully will allow us access to all of our schools and large gathering places. Basically, it's an extension to the Smart 911 service that we have today. That same company would be able to deliver us an application that we can determine who can become users of the application. And it's basically called a panic button. So if an event takes place in a school, those predetermined people who have access to that panic button can have immediate access to the 911 system through Smart 911 simply by pushing their app. And then that information could eventually grow into video capabilities of the facility that the responders are responding to, being brought into the 911 center, and that's the way our responders would be able to make much more informed decisions, situational awareness as they're traveling to the event, rather than getting to the event and then trying to figure out what they're going to do. So that's where we are today. With, you know, we're just shy of 2 months from starting up. I envision us hopefully by school year having a few products available to us that will enhance our capabilities and staffing the room during the school hours of the day, or maybe the busier hours of our 911 center. So that's where the Fusion Center lies. I'm glad to answer any questions any of you may have. I hope I didn't confuse anyone anymore. I know many of you attended the grand opening of the center, so I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Any questions, comments from members of council? Questions, comments from members of the general public? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is the Sparrow Run operation.
Chief. We have officers embedded in federal task forces, and the way that works is those officers are sworn into the varying task forces and have the exact same powers as the federal agents that they work with. The benefit to that is the federal agencies that we have our officers sworn into bring funding, they bring cars, overtime, and they also bring the ability to do investigations at a much higher level than we possess, things such as search warrants, including telephones, and tracking those said phones. So the officers that we have embedded in the FBI worked on Operation Smackdown, and the name, because of the leader of the group, Adrian Smack. Basically, there's a three-tiered approach to what was going on in Sparrow Run. Even though many of these people weren't laying their head in Sparrow Run, they were applying their trade there, which was not very fair to the people that do live there. And the three tiers are heroin suppliers, heroin dealers, and the low-level end users that are also committing criminal acts to support their habits in the form of property crime. And when you go after them, it's very important to us, because not only are you affecting the property crime in Newcastle County, they're the ones that are typically giving you the most information. The others have already been anointed into the system and go by the policy of never say anything to the police. And you can see that lion's share of the individuals were arrested. Many of them are connected to Wilmington. Many of them are connected to other developments in Newcastle County. And we believe that the uptick in shootings in Newcastle County has some involvement in this gang, but
We're hoping to see a decrease now that we have many of them apprehended. Sparrow Run is one of our areas recognized by the TAPS program, and these offenders operate in many areas, but primarily right on Route 40, as it serves as direct access to Maryland, Elkton, which is also immersed in a huge heroin problem. Took about 8 months to run this down. We worked directly with the FBI and our partners at the Attorney General's office. Over 400 criminal indictments, to include multiple tier drug distribution, weapons possession, possession of illegal drugs, conspiracy, and other related offenses. As of June 8, 2015, 40 of the 42 people have been arrested and charged as a result of this investigation. The arrests, most of which occurred on May 28, 2015, were a collaboration of multiple agencies to include the FBI, Delaware State Police, Wilmington Police, Delaware Department of Corrections, Probation and Parole, multiple other agencies participating on local task force levels. 10,524 bags of heroin, approximately 157.86 grams, 27.4 grams of marijuana, 35.5 grams of cocaine, $17,000 in United States currency, fully loaded 9mm handgun, a .32 revolver, and numerous rounds of ammunition. And it looks like that's the net gain of this, but the real net gain of this is that we sent a very powerful message to the area of Sparrow Run and the people that are operating in there that we're not going to tolerate even the lowest level of heroin dealing in Newcastle County. We're taking it very seriously, and sometimes it takes an investigation of this caliber to bring them down, but down they went. Take any questions that you may have.
Councilman Small.
I just want to congratulate your department and all those involved. This is one of the things that we need people to see, not only the size, but so that they understand why it takes so long. As I tell them, they can go into the house you're complaining about, but if nothing sticks in the courtroom, you've just fed that fire. But also, I will probably offend someone, but I'm going to say it since we discuss it a lot. Can we go back to the first slide? I'm sorry, yeah. I'd like to applaud your department's diversity of apprehension.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And the females up there, some of them are involved in prostitution as well, and they, you know, that's always looked at so often as a victimless crime. And it's not. The prostitutes bring the Johns bring the pimps bring the drug dealers, and if you allow one level of it, you allow the whole thing. It's not allowed.
There are several familiar Wawa ladies up there.
Yep. Any other questions for me?
Councilman Taggart and then Councilman Cartier.
Right. Well, Chief, as you know, this area's in my district, so, you know, I thank you for the efforts there. That area has been hard ridden with crime and drugs for a long time.
Yes.
I've often heard, although I've never really heard your department speak it, but I've heard we have a large component of illegals in there that are preyed upon pretty heavily, that go unreported because of documentation purposes and all. I've just heard that rumor through there, the Boys and Girls Clubs and stuff where I've been. I'm never really sure if that's actually the case or not, but this example is what I use when I go to my community meetings, that I tell them about this, the breakdown, the crackdown that happened, and the magnitude that our department, along with the other jurisdictions, were actually able to do there. But I also point out the fact of how things are changing. And the one thing that we didn't see here was prescription drugs. So the drug of choice has shifted because of the crackdown over there, and I talk about it every time. So, and I tell people that we're not, in the most part, busking people. When you see these press releases with, you know, a bag of heroin, two bags, 10 bags, yeah, they're hundreds of bags.
Now, in many cases like that, we're trying to get those people to a drug diversion court, because mm-hmm. there's so many people that are actual victims of the actual of being addicted. They slipped into it, so to speak. And you know, no, we're going after the ones that have a propensity for the drug, won't leave it alone, do not want to be a participant in diversion courts, do not want help. No, they want to steal your lawnmower and anything else they can get their hands on and sell it for drugs. And you know, those are the ones we went after in this one. Instead of just going after low-level users, we went all the way up to the dealer. And that's an ongoing case inside the DEA. But for right now,
we had to shut Sparrow Run down for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we sent a message, and the reason when we thanked the state police, Wilmington police, and the other agencies is because the search warrants were served simultaneously. And it's why we were not speaking too much about Sparrow Run in the weekly TAPS meeting, because this was coming up. When you send all those SWAT teams into all those different homes and bring out these guns, these drugs, cash stuffed in a shoebox like it was in this case, it tells everybody, you know, it might be a good time to knock it off. You know, and that was the message we should be sending.
And this also, you know, speaks volumes to the fact of your new policing model and the fact that your job's not over in here because you've pulled them out and you've created a void, so we don't want it to reemerge.
No, that's why the constant maintenance in TAPS areas is so important.
Mm-hmm.
Councilman Carter.
Yeah, great multidisciplinary and multi-jurisdictional effort on behalf, of course, I guess, led by our county police in this very large-scale, you know, drug bust operation. And I hope that, you know, we continue this model and continue to target areas and really work hard to, you know, bring some peace and quiet in some of these neighborhoods that really are plagued by this kind of stuff. And, you know, I just applaud your efforts and want to encourage you to do more of it.
You know, we continue to appreciate council support.
Any other comments, questions from council members? Any other questions, comments from the general public? Moving on to other, I'm going to start. I didn't want to take up a lot of time on the agenda, but Chief, what's up there is commendable. What I'm saddened about is last year, sometime early in the year, we took over the Lancaster Court and had the biggest bust, heroin bust in the history of the state. And yet, we come back and it says, it's a business, supply and demand. And I don't see, I'm not faulting us as a government, but I just don't see what kind of progress we're making across the state in reducing the demand. And then this is Jay talking. You got those folks down there in Dover. You know, we're going to decriminalize marijuana. It's not criminalized now. When you got these young boys walking around the street smoking marijuana like it's cigarettes, to the point where somebody stands up on the corner of the daycare center waiting for a bus for his child, standing up there smoking and act like somebody's bothering him when they say something to him about it. But they want to decriminalize marijuana and ignore the fact that for all the heroin addicts and all the folks suffering from heroin, for over 90% of them, the initial drug of choice was marijuana. So as we continue to travel down this road of making drugs legal and acquiescing what folks obviously are not concerned about, I have some major concerns. I have some major problems across the board. In the last week alone, three different council districts, three sets of shooters. So police department's hands are full, paramedics' hands are full, emergency center hands are full, and all this touches us. And, you know, I commend the effort, but I'm greatly, greatly concerned and saddened about the fact that, you know, the drug of choice now on the street is heroin, and I don't see where we're winning this battle. And I see it being a lot worse going down the road. So I just wanted to give my two cents and not take up everybody's time. Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Can I just add something to that? I guess it's really a question probably for the Colonel. Some of the issue with decriminalizing marijuana is, in my understanding, that if there is a small amount that you find when you make a stop, with that, if it was not decriminalized, you would have probable cause to go into a vehicle and possibly find more of something that's in there, whether it be guns or other drugs. With the decriminalization, does that take that probable cause away from you?
It certainly clouds the issue,
Councilwoman, it is going to get dicey from here, and as you decriminalize marijuana, I for one believe that we overshot our goal on the war on drugs, as the councilman had said, and we made some mistakes, and you know, we're not the lawmakers, but we are saddled with the responsibility of the laws, and some of them do need to be revisited. I think there's got to be a better way. You know, the prison system, there's more people in prison in the United States than any other country in the world. That's China and India. Of the people that are in prison, most of them are African American or Hispanic. The number is sitting somewhere around 60%. I think we have to ask ourselves at some point, did we make a mistake? To answer your question directly, will we lose probable cause on plain view of marijuana or the, you know, us saying I smelled the odor of marijuana? I think you will lose it. But right now, those are the questions that we're dealing with. We as police are dealing with the fact, what are you going to do with decriminalization of marijuana? In regards to, are they going to be fined? Are they going to receive a letter? And even Delgis, Cegis, everyone is saying now what? But I mean, I think that there's a reason to decriminalize it, because on the one end, where it's a gateway drug that's past proven reliable, at the same time, a 17 or an 18 year old that says, "Well, it's my right to passage to smoke marijuana one time in my life," gets caught and is stuck with a record for the rest of his days. Is that right? I mean, I'm not saying I know the answers. I'm just saying there's got to be a better way to build a mousetrap here.
And so in following the method of the TAPS program, I mean, do you see that you had this probable cause on people that you have picked up on speeding, whatever it is, you know, the early part of the evening prior to things escalating? I mean, are you seeing that would affect your TAPS program?
No, I don't see it as that, because, you know, the TAPS program, you know, right now with 2.5 years under our belt, we realize that instead of going into an area and harassing an entire area with zero tolerance policing that almost seems like bullyism, it has a more laser-targeted approach. We know that on Thursday night on A Street in Development B, that between 7 and 9, there's going to be issues. And we're going to focus on those people rather than torment an entire neighborhood that says that all they're doing is stopping certain people or they're just harassing certain people. No, the TAPS program, by going through all quality of life crime and isolating it and saying where and when it's going to happen, and in some cases, right down to the house, which we just go and knock on their door and say, you know, you've become a problem for us. And we have a conversation with them, and it's been effective. I hate to lose some probable cause situations, but I do think it's coming with the decriminalization of marijuana. And, you know, as far as heroin goes, you know, last year this council and the executive was convinced by the Director of Public Safety, Joe Bryant, myself, and others, that we have to start educating about heroin. If we really want to do something about it, we have to educate the next generation that heroin is not a recreational drug. It is, you know, I'm not suggesting or condoning other drugs are, or I'm not condoning their use, but heroin, unlike the other drugs, it resets your opiate receptors in your brain, and it lets you know one thing and one thing only. I want more heroin. And we educate our kids about seatbelts. We've educated our kids about DUI. We have spent millions of dollars on great programs, by the way, but I mean, your kid doesn't get in the car without putting their seatbelt on. Now that is mine. And then because we successfully said, you know, click it or ticket. It cost millions of dollars. This should too. We need to educate about heroin. If we're going to save the next generation, we have to start telling the truth that 70% of the heroin users never get out. They either die or they're incarcerated or eventually, you know, worse. They're the people that are in recovery, the last numbers I heard that over half of them relapse. And it's just really, it's a tragic drug that people think, you know, it's not addicting and it's the same as everything else, and it just isn't. So it's damn near impossible to get off of, and I've heard many, many heroin addicts try to explain what it's like to try and break the cycle.
Thanks.
And then you have one to spend 25 years on methadone, the methadone killer.
Yeah.
Okay. And it goes back to the initial drug of choice. But the other part of it is, I get high every day and I smoke marijuana every day because I don't have a job, because I've been kicked out of school. I don't have anything else to do but get high and then all of a sudden, the marijuana doesn't make me high anymore, so I go to the next level, and go to the next level, and there ends my destiny, right up there. So, you know, we've got to be all inclusive, and then we've got the wise men and decision makers sitting down there in Dover, gonna decriminalize it, gonna grow it, distribute it. Don't even have sense enough to tax it, so at least you could do something preventive on the back end of it. So I'm frustrated. I'll go on to the next thing. Anything else on the other? Is there a motion?
Motion adjourned.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Means adjourned.
Okay.
Okay, don't you have a chair?
It just makes me very sad that we have done nothing in this county.
What?
Why are we picking up on the development and the executive meeting? All our work and other technology meetings?